Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:34 p.m. and that is on March 5th. And when we look at markets today, it was a very news-heavy day. So, for example, we had the results of the Italian election, and Germany finally got a government. But it was the Italian vote for populist parties, which will probably put Berlusconi's Forza Italia into power again. But it'll be in large part a hung parliament. So the chances of anything really getting done or challenging the status quo are quite unlikely. Then you have the fact that US 10-year Treasury yields were up and now pushing through to almost 2.9% again. This has been a very orderly consolidation. And 3% is not that far away, despite the fact that you have a short-term over a bought condition on the yield, then I think the balance of probabilities is still that we're going to see some additional upside. And part of the reason for that is because of we're seeing a substantial move in the middle of the curve around the 5-year duration. And that's where a lot of the new issuance is going to come from. There's a lot of debt needs to be issued this year or refinanced this year and the same next year and even more the year after. And a lot of that debt is going to come in at around these maturities of anything between about 2 and 5 years. There's not that much of it is going to be around the 10-year handle. So it is in the middle of the curve is where we're seeing the greatest sense of additional upside. And when we look at this on a long-term basis, well, now we have clear evidence that the base has been completed. And I think that that is very important. When anyone who thinks about what's going to happen next on the longer end of the curve, well, you don't have to be too imaginative to think that if the 5-year is at 2.64 and the 10-year is at 2.88, well, if the 5-year continues to rise at this clip, then we are talking about a move that is substantial. And there's the possibility, if the 10-year weren't going to catch up, that you could get an inversion between the 5-year and the 10-year, which would be a very odd set of circumstances. So when we look at that yield curve spread, it is contracting again. It's down now to 64 basis points, and it's not that long ago it was at 80 basis points. And that is despite the fact that it in fact bounced a little bit in here today. Well, when we look at the 2-year, then that is, I think, where the majority of the selling pressure has been coming from, and it has paused over the course of the last 2 weeks. But this continues to remain an environment where our yields are likely to move higher. Then in China, you had the budget came out, and they're going to be a little bit more fiscally conservative, and they are pulling back for the first time since 2014 from the fiscal largesse. This is another central bank that is beginning to pull back from a mix or a single-minded focus on either monetary or fiscal largesse. So the US is currently running fiscal stimulus but is pulling back on the monetary front. The Europeans are running loose monetary policy and arguably they are not pushing on the fiscal side any longer. Japan is running both monetary and fiscal stimulus. China is probably neutral now on the fiscal front and is neutral also on the monetary front. So when we look at the total quantity of money that's sitting on those central bank balance sheets, then we know that it is at a record high. But it isn't accelerating higher. I think that's perhaps the best way to think about it. And perhaps the more important point is that when this eventually does roll over, and it has largely paused over the last month, and this wouldn't be the first time it has paused, but when it eventually does roll over, then that is going to spell a significant headwind for what has been and continues to be a very impressive liquidity-fueled rally. What I find particularly interesting is that the chart that we're getting right now on the on the oil contracts, where we now have a higher reaction low for Brent crude and indeed West Texas Intermediate. This is despite the fact that news today was that the US is likely to become the largest producer in the world within the next few years. And that's a significant designation. And the fact that the US is now exporting makes it a, I think, perhaps the most important swing producer, because a lot of unconventional supply is highly elastic. And as long as the OPEC cartel and everyone who's helping to support it are curtailing their supply, then the independent producers that you have in the US are likely to continue to increase theirs. When we look at the futures curve, and perhaps it is better to look at West Texas Intermediate in that regard, then we can see clearly that you can hedge exposure out to 2020 at about $55 a barrel. Well, when that price gets up towards 70, then they'll be hedging much closer to 65, and then that is going to represent a significant source of additional supply all the way out to, for 2 years. So when we look at what the outlook is for oil prices, then the chances are that following considering the fact that we have had a meaningfully larger pullback over the course of the last few weeks, or if you're in fairness, it was back in January, then the outlook is likely to be choppier. That we are not going to have the same consistency of the advance that we saw between June and January that in the next few months, because so much additional supply becomes economic above $70, and the US is particularly well placed to benefit from that. Well, one of the things that people were worried about on Friday was the increase in tariffs, and they were looking at steel and aluminium. Well, one of the things that I think is worthy of consideration is that we are likely to have an environment where the US is going to become more protectionist. That is very much part and parcel of Trump's agenda. That's, in fact, one of the reasons why he was able to get himself elected. So I think that is quite likely. What we can see quite clearly is that aluminium, for example, has been trending higher in a reasonably consistent manner since the end of 2015. And that is a condition that is relatively similar for the London, the LME Metals Index, which was in negative territory in here today, but has continued to march higher. When we think about what is going on in China, then the index has pulled back. On the one hand, China is looking more risky because of single-person government. The transition away from a predictable rotation of leadership into a single-person administration or dictatorship represents a risk premium. But what it also represents is deteriorating governance. And that is quite different from other emerging markets, where the absolute level of governance might be lower, but the trajectory is improving. Whereas, in many respects, China's governance has been improving for quite some time, particularly on the economic front. But politically, it is a retrograde step, and it therefore represents heightened risk because governance is deteriorating. China today announced that they were going to have a more fiscally austere budget, now that they were going to try and balance the books. Where that is most likely to be felt is in the property market. And the Shanghai Property Index pulled back very sharply in February and so far hasn't rallied particularly impressively. It really does need to continue to hold the region of the trend mean, or this is going to look more akin to the kind of environment we had in 2015 than the upward trending environment that has prevailed since 2016. So I think that this is a rather key level. But the other point, of course, is that China is by far the biggest importer of raw commodities. Everything from corn to gold to oil and nickel and copper. So, and when we think about it in those terms, it's probably not going to be overly affected by tariffs on those particular products. But there are lots of other countries that also produce steel, and India is one of those. And India does depend on steel exports. And so, for that matter, Taiwan is also a big steel exporter. And the Nifty index is hovering here around the region of the trend mean. It failed to sustain the breakout to new highs in February, and we're still in a process of mean reversion and consolidation. Now, as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, I don't think anyone is going to be particularly worried about it. But the reality is that it is in a process of consolidation. And the bank index is leading on the downside right now, and it is right in the region of the trend mean. If the banking index breaks down, the chances are that it is going to take the Nifty with it. So this is, I think, a key moment to be paying particular attention to Japan, excuse me, to India. I'll come to Japan in a moment, to India, because the banking sector has been such a reliable lead indicator over the last few years. Well, when we look at what's going on in Japan, then the index was right down to test the February lows in here today. And when we look at the Topix Banks index, then it's a similar story, that it is right on its lows and it needs to demonstrate support in these levels. But I continue to think that we may have a chicken and egg situation in terms of inflation and bond yields, but that if we have continued movements in bond yields, that it is going to put upward pressure on the way that inflation is calculated. And we're certainly seeing that energy prices are improving, and that soft commodity prices, namely food, is also prices are also improving, and that is going to feed through into inflationary pressures. Well, there is no country that would benefit more from the return of inflation than Japan. The Japanese banks are still in a position where they are trading at book values that are among the lowest in the world, and there is no doubting that one of the reasons that they haven't performed better over the course of the last few years is because they still have a lot of outstanding debts. But the reality is that once you get inflation going, that all of that legacy debt is much less of a problem. So I continue to think that Japan is the market that is likely to benefit most if we move back into an inflationary environment. And that would suggest that once we do have evidence of support being found, that it is likely to represent an attractive entry opportunity. Well, then when we look at what's going on in Europe, I think the kind of environment that we've had has been rather complacent. That with Macron winning in France and Merkel holding on to power in Germany, despite the fact that the AfD in recent polls has been the second largest party, it wasn't really until we had the election in Italy that we see another government coming through that is likely to be somewhat Eurosceptic. And when we look at what's going on in the Eurozone, what people, I think, are beginning to conclude is that despite the fact that you have had this move towards populism in Italy, that it is unlikely to change the status quo because it's going to be a hung parliament. So you have the Eurostoxx index has bounced from the region of its lows, but not in a particularly emphatic fashion. And as long as it is holding those lows, we can probably give the benefit of the doubt to higher to lateral ranging, but we will not have confirmation that we're back in a truly demand-dominated environment until it pushes back up above the trend mean. What I also find interesting here is that the UK has a similar condition, that it is hovering here right above that 7,000 level. And when we look at the pound versus the euro, then it is right down here around this 112 area. This has been a very inert range for what has been one of the most volatile currency pairs in the world over the last few years. It represents this balance that has evolved between the outlook for Europe and the UK. When it's at the lower side of this range, generally speaking, people are concluding that things are going in the EU's favor. When we're at the upper side of the range, people are concluding the opposite. So if this range is going to persist, then the pound will have to rally and rally smartly from this area. And we saw at least some evidence of support starting to come through in the short term. Somebody in the UK is going to end up being very upset by whatever is negotiated with the EU. And quite whether that is going to be the Eurosceptics, the Northern Irish parties, or the Remainers, remains very much open to question. There are an considerable number of competing ambitions among all the various parties, and that's before they even begin to talk with the EU. So it virtually ensures that there is somebody going to be unhappy, and whether the government can then subsequently survive is a rather big question. Then we also had news today that Amazon is moving into banking, and that was enough to reignite interest in the share, and it now is trading above $1,500 a share. Well, this is still a very emphatic move, and the fact that it rebounded so very quickly from the lows that we saw in early February helped to highlight the fact that people know what they want, and that Amazon and the mega cap technology shares are clearly the leaders in this advance, and that until they start to roll over, then the majority of investors are likely to conclude that there isn't very much to worry about. When we also then look at Apple, Apple has been trading right in the region of its peak. Microsoft is also not very far away from its peak, and then when we look at Google, Google was one of the shares that had had one of the larger pullbacks and has subsequently not rallied with the same vigor. Well, I think Google is this has a serious inconsistency for the share. This is a $200 pullback, and it's never pulled back by more than $100 and change since really since the beginning of 2010. So it has not pulled back below the trend mean, and as long as it is trading above the trend mean, I think people will be reasonably sanguine about it. But should it start to trade below the trend mean after that larger pullback, then we would have to start thinking about top formation completion. We're not there yet, and Google could quite easily spend the next few months ranging and subsequently push on to new high ground. That is certainly not beyond the bounds of possibility at all, but it is certainly a share that is worth keeping an eye on. And then Facebook has continued to steady here in the region of the trend mean, and as long as it continues to do that, then very many investors will have experienced no profit erosion, and things will still be reasonably sanguine. Against that background, what we're starting to see is that some of the other social media properties are doing better, and Twitter continues to extend its advance, and Snap is bouncing from the region of the trend mean and the upper side of that underlying range. So these are, I think, rather important developments. When we also look at the gold market, it was relatively unchanged in here today. Well, gold has base formation characteristics. There's a clear rounding characteristic to this base over the course of the last 3 years, with the turning point being in 2016. But it will have to continue to hold the region of the trend mean if it's going to remain consistent. And gold does tend to do best in an environment where you have negative real interest rates. And so far, interest rates have been rising faster than inflation. It is going to take a genuine inflation scare to really ignite interest in the gold market, and most particularly in the gold shares. The Gold Bugs Index broke to new lows last week. It's barely steady at the lower side of its range, and that is despite the fact that a considerable number of the gold miners now have production, all-in production figures in the region of $800 to $900, and the price of gold is still around $1,300. So they are offering leverage for the first time in an awfully long time to a rising gold price, and they will likely be one of the sectors that have the potential to play catch up in a pretty dynamic way if we do see gold firming from these levels. So I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.